welcome to Minor Rex. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Joel and Tony, and we're here to talk about Spider-Man, all things Spider-Man. There's so much Spider-Man going on. There's movies, there's video games, there's comic books, of course, and several different movies. I know Tony's wanted to talk about one of them for a long time. So we're just here to talk about all things Spider-Man today. We're going to start with Far From Home. That's the new movie in theaters, or just out of theaters. And then we'll move on from there. So let's talk about Spider-Man Far From Home. It's the second in the Tom Holland, although he's been Spider-Man now five or six times between the Avengers movies and Civil War and all of that. But guys, what did you think of Far From Home? Who's got a strong opinion about Spider-Man?
Well, on Far From Home, and of course, spoiler alert, but I think that everybody kind of knows there's like a secretive type of villain in this movie, so I can't really spoil this one too hard. But I think that Far From Home was a pretty good addition to the Marvel movies, but I didn't love it as a Spider-Man movie for whatever reason. Like, there are some real problems that made me not like it as much. Mainly, I don't think Spider-Man was as entertaining as Spider-Man could be in this movie. I think his supporting cast was more... There was a lot going on with his supporting cast, and I didn't really see the character Spider-Man come out, except for, like, well, maybe one or two scenes where he was, like, kind of getting excited about, like, the multiverse. I didn't really see him struggling with his teenage problems as much as we were used to, or in this case, like, his... Like, the relationships were still there, and there was some character development, but I didn't feel like that was really as exciting, in this one, for whatever reason.
I kind of feel like he was a little more closed off in this one. I think that's because they were doing... He feels bad about Tony Stark, and so he's got to feel bad for at least the first half of the movie.
Yeah,
and so, like, he was kind of a bummer. He was kind of like, I just want to relax. I just want to be myself. And, like, he said that a couple times, and then, you know, that's kind of what he did, was he just like, you know, I'm just going to be normal, and that's not what we're here to see. I still think I enjoyed the movie very much, and I thought it was still a good character from my point of view. But, yeah, you've got a point. Like, it wasn't... He was handcuffed a little bit for half the movie because it's just like, oh, you got to be sad for all the stuff that happened.
Yeah, it's harder to use wit and, like, humor when you're – the story arc kind of dictates that you're supposed to be in this darker place. And, I mean, even kind of like as he fought his rival, there wasn't as much to latch onto in terms of material for him to be joking about with, you know, Mysterio and all that. And it's like there wasn't much for him to make jokes and make humor and make sly remarks. And I think that's what people really responded to in the first place with Tom Hardy as – Not Tom Hardy. That's Tom Holland.
Tom Hardy is Venom.
I really want Venom in this movie. And I just feel like Spider-Man is like, part of it is just that he talks when he fights. And I didn't see that nearly as much because there was less to talk to, maybe. Yeah. So
I felt this was a bridge between the previous movie chronologically to the next one. And this movie, where it picks you up and then it drops you off at a much different place at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I actually can't wait to see what happens in the next movie,
more
so than be excited about this movie.
Yeah, sure.
So, and I hate to, because Empire is my favorite of the original Star Wars movies, but I really felt like that was like a bridge movie itself to get you from where stuff ended at after A New Hope and to get you to a Return of the Jedi. But and this kind of reminded me of that in a sense, where it had like a lot of interpersonal development, but not as much...
Yeah,
action.
Like, we got to get these relationships to this place, so let's do that slog here in the second movie.
So do you feel like people would be able to watch the second movie without seeing Homecoming and be able to pick up everything? Or do you feel like because it is this, like, bridge, you're going to be completely lost if you haven't seen the first?
No, and not even that, but you've got to see all of Infinity War and Endgame to make sense of what happens in Far From Home. So, like, Homecoming, you got to see Homecoming at least before you see.
Right.
But it's a good idea to also watch all of the other Marvel movies that have ever been made before you watch Far From Home.
See, I feel like that's my increasing problem with the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now I can't see as many movies and then missing out on two or three. When I was watching Endgame, I've seen, you know, all of the Avengers, but I think I missed one of the Thor ones and I missed one of the Captain America ones. And through the whole time, my husband was like, stop asking these questions. But so many little pieces were missing. And so it's getting harder to keep up if you can't keep up with everything, I feel like. I'm going to miss out. I saw the Miles Morales Spider-Man that came out.
Into
the Spider-Verse. And I really liked that one. But I also felt like I'm missing a lot of things that were probably put in there for, you know, huge Spider-Man fans. And I'm not getting the full picture.
I liked Into the Spider-Verse very much. I thought it was – it hit everything. Like, the animation was not only good but weird, so it was different, and it was special in that way. I thought the voice actors all did a good job because the idea – so the idea is there's Spider-Man characters from different worlds here in our world. So there's this kind of Spider-Man and that kind of Spider-Man and this kind of different – so all the different characters all had to be unique, and I think they pulled that off very well, not only with the animated design, but with voicing. And just, you know, there were some great twists and some good jokes. And you know,
great music.
Great music and all that, yeah. Into the Spider-Verse was
where they stand on itself, too, yeah.
And I thought for that one, even though I knew I was not getting, like, the jokes because I didn't know what the background of all these extra Spider-Men were, but I didn't feel like it made me miss, like, what was happening in a way that I sometimes do with, like, the Avengers. Where if I miss a movie, I can't put the pieces together. But here I felt like I could put all the pieces together. And there's so much to enjoy for a casual Spider-Man fan or just, you know, someone who wants to see something interesting happening.
Yeah. I found myself recommending that to two completely different age group / demographics. And it made me realize just as heartfelt each time. And it made me realize, like, what a great Swiss Army knife of a movie that was. Like, wherever you're coming from, you're probably going to enjoy this film, Into the Spider-Verse. It just, it's a lot of fun. You can even just sit down, watch a little bit, and peck out, like, because my kids watch it all the time. And I can't not watch it when I sit down. It's just, it's just enjoyable wherever you're at. Again, great interpersonal relationships. You care about what happens to the characters. You're shocked at some of the things that happen, and I just felt that it kind of met you where you're at.
Yeah, and I mean, the action in Into the Spider-Verse was just weird and wacky and wild and humorous. And they did things, in, I think, probably with the animation that you probably can barely do with Far From Home. But even Far From Home did some really cool abstract things. Like, don't get me wrong. There were, I just feel like there were fewer very, very neat, oh, that was cool moments in Far From Home. Whereas, like, there were a lot of really, oh, that was cool moments in, like, the Spider-Verse. And I think, like, it really energizes you, I think, watching a movie like that where it's, like, timed so perfectly with the music and just, like, I don't know, has such good, yeah, like you say, the character development and, like, interpersonal struggles and stuff like that, so.
I also feel like Far From Home retreaded a lot of things because it's like, oh, we're still establishing a new Spider-Man. We need to establish these responsibilities and these relationships and things like that, whereas Into the Spider-Verse had a lot of new twists. Like, here's some new ideas for Kingpin and Dr. Octopus, and here's a lot of new ideas for Spider-Man in a way that addressed the Spider-Man character by having these different, you know, Peter Parker and Miles Morales and Gwen Stacy all be a Spider-Man or a Spider-Woman, I'm a Spider-Girl in some cases, kind of addressed that character, that what is Spider-Man? What do all these different people have in common that, you know, one of them, I think the strongest thing was, you know, we're all here to, we've all suffered a terrible loss and we're all here to prevent future losses, which I think is very Spider-Man. Whether it was an Uncle Ben or a Peter Parker or whomever they lost, they recognize that if I can prevent this loss for someone else, I should do that. That empathy that is at the core of Spider-Man. So, yeah, Into the Spider-Verse was great. It's here at the library if you want to place a hold or check it out. I very much recommend that. In addition to the Spider-Man graphic novels and the Spider-Man video games and the Spider-Man movies that we have. I've had a lot of fun with Spider-Man recently. I've been rereading Superior Spider-Man, which is another deconstruction. It's a graphic novel. It is about Dr. Octopus takes over Spider-Man's brain and his body and decides, not only am I going to be Spider-Man, I'm going to be a better Spider-Man than Peter Parker ever was. I'm going to be the Superior Spider-Man, as the title indicates. It addresses all of those things, all of those factors. Like, what is it about Spider-Man? Is it Uncle Ben? Is it, you know, the idea of going on patrols? Is it Mary Jane? Is it these losses? Is it these villains? What is it that defines Spider-Man? And this book goes through that almost like bit by bit, piece by piece. Let's look at every bullet point on the list of what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man and ask why. I read it when it was new and I reread it again for this podcast because I like it so much. And so Spider-Man, what is it about Spider-Man that we like? What is it about each of us here or people at home that really resonates? And for me, it's a lot about his personal responsibility. I have to do this. I have to save these people. I have to help my landlord with her groceries or whatever big or small task he's doing. It's that responsibility.
And you also mentioned, I think one of the things on the list, and I'm not sure if Superior Spider-Man talks about, but I'm curious if you want to speak to it, is like the way Peter's responsibility to his friends and like the whole Goblin story arc, because that's very much a feeling of responsibility to almost like be protective and to be helpful to the friend in need, to the point where it's like destructive and to the point where you have to make a choice almost, right?
Sure.
Do they talk about that at all in Superior?
A little bit. It's interesting because Dr. Octopus finds himself making new friends. Like at first he's like, oh, you know, Peter Parker. Well, they were broken up at this point, but this Mary Jane is a very attractive young woman. I should pursue this relationship. And then as he, you know, talks to her, he's like, I don't like this woman at all. I don't know what Peter Parker ever saw in her. But then he starts to make new friends and then learns that those relationships are vulnerable and learns, again, why Spider-Man wears the mask. It's to protect the ones he loves from being vulnerable, being made vulnerable.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because Into the Spider-Verse, I'm trying to even recall, I think it was, it was Kingpin was kind of the villain in that. And Far From Home, the thing I felt was missing is the villain that, like, really was a compelling villain, like Homecoming had, which was the Vulture. Vulture was just really cool and really well portrayed.
And straight evil. Like, he had his own reasons for being evil, but, you know, there was just, like, I am a bad guy. You knew it from, you know, the moment that, you know, he snarled on screen. This is the villain. This is the bad guy in the movie. And I like the twist from Far From Home very much, which I think it's fair to say that Mysterio is not all he seems. I think we can say that much at least. And so I liked how it played off, but he didn't seem like a bad guy until like the very, very end. And you're like, okay, now this guy's evil. Now I buy into Spider-Man needs to defeat him. Whereas Vulture, you knew it through the whole movie.
Yet there were moments sprinkled in throughout Vulture's arc where you're like, you know, this guy isn't, just when you got to the very edge, you have to like disappear over, you came back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought there was less of that with Mysterio.
Mysterio, yeah, that's a good point, is that he had, like, he's the classic, you know, hero in my own story. I'm not a villain. I'm doing all the right things and all the good things for the people that I love and defending them by stealing and hurting people and killing people and
the
all those
Robin
horrible
Hood complex.
Things. Sure. Right. Mysterio kind of had that a little bit, but not as much and not as
it wasn't as
well
complex.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. Part of what I enjoy about Spider-Man is, and Peter Parker specifically, is, and what Homecoming brought out was just the going to high school, my thing, like the whole Archie in Riverdale kind of feeling. And then, oh yeah, it's also a spider. It's like, and on top of that, he's able to lift the locker, grab his uniform, and put it down. So like he's this kid with superhuman abilities, but also with this superhuman responsibilities, right? That's where we get, if with great powers come great responsibility. And I enjoy that aspect of it, but I think Far From Home had him dealing with way weightier topics, not unnecessarily, but just that kind of felt too, they were trying to force it together, you know, his actions might cause the death of people, and it showed him interacting with that, and it was just kind of course, you know, he's battling life and death situations, but even just as normal, it seemed to me to be kind of out of kilter with each other. On the trip across Europe, and it really requires a little bit of buy-in to that part of the plot. So there a little bit more of a suspension of disbelief than normal.
Yeah, the more we talk about it, it feels like an Iron Man movie, right? And that's kind of the point of the movie, I guess, is that he misses Tony Stark, he misses the Iron Man, the world misses the Iron Man. But yeah, like the movie is kind of the same way. It's about Iron Man values than it is about Spider-Man values, which is, you know, I'm here to protect the ones I love and do my homework. And like that's a key thing, because Spider-Man was the first teenage superhero. He was the first non-sidekick. He was the first. This was Stan Lee and Steve Ditko's brilliant moment that let's have a high school superhero. And it paid off in a lot of ways because Spider-Man has stood the test of time. Sometimes it gets a little confused. People have different takes on it, but Spider-Man is that. How do I balance kind of the opposite of the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four were, I want to be a superhero and a celebrity and a human being and all of these things at once. And I love all of it. Like, I love that people know my name. I love that people see me on the street and they know that I'm a superhero. And then Spider-Man flipped all of that and said, I can't do it. I can't be a celebrity. I can't be a superhero. And I can't be a teenager going to high school all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So where the Fantastic Four was like an attractive, you know, industry-saving comic book, Spider-Man was a more personal story.
A more relatable.
Absolutely. Story. Yeah. The Fantastic Four, I think, are in no way relatable.
Right.
Whereas everything about Spider-Man is relatable. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe Far From Home kind of lost a little bit of that because it was over the top and the world is in danger and all of that stuff.
So, like, it had too much weight from having to deal with these other stories, the Iron Man story, whereas if it was maybe a little more detached, it could have developed along its own terms more.
Yeah, there was an artifact, for example, some plot spoilers, but there's like a thing that he gets as a gift from Tony Stark, and it's just like he just gets a lot of like basically a very powerful weapon that it in a lot of ways it's the call to action, it's the call to be the defender of the people, but he shirks it, and that's what ends up spiraling everything out into a bad place, and he has to stick around for the cleanup. And I think like that having like the technology be some kind of external piece of Spider-Man is also kind of weird because he's the inventor of his technology. That always bothered me about the Iron Man Spider-Man crossover that we've had since the start of Marvel is usually Spider-Man makes his tech. You know, he's smart enough. Why not build this stuff himself?
His dad came up with the web fluid formula and then he figured out, if I put this in, you know, wrist-mounted mechanisms, I can swing from buildings. And so he invented those machines that he wore on his wrist to swing and capture bad guys and all that good stuff. Like, that was his idea.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. And then he also has the baggage of just kind of, like, coming from this superhero cast. He's used to going to, like, hidden basements and talking about getting in those group huddles where they save the world. And it's like, that's no big new thing for him. Yeah. So it seemed kind of not relatable, like kind of goes back to that. So,
but then like Joel says, like it kind of ended in a place where I'm excited about this Spider-Man again. And I'm excited for the next movie.
Right.
Because the theme of Far From Home is like, oh, you should be more like Iron Man. And then at the end he's like, no, I don't. And then we're like, okay, great. But you weren't like, did we need this whole movie to establish that? Could we have just gone from 1 to 3? I don't know, maybe. So we'll see what the next movie holds, but it establishes a lot of things that, or reestablishes a lot of things, maybe, is the problem. I don't know. I still like a lot of Far From Home. I don't want to get down on it, but it's...
it was enjoyable.
It was enjoyable. There were some twists, but it wasn't, you know, I definitely prefer Homecoming, and I definitely prefer Into the Spider-Verse to Far From Home, so I think that's...
Not having seen any of the Tom Holland, which is the, you know, the post-Marvel Cinematic Universe, how did that iteration compare to the Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, like pre-MCU, like more standalone films?
I like Tom Holland a lot. I didn't like Tobey Maguire, but not his fault. I kind of don't like Sam Raimi's take.
Sam Raimi's take.
That Spider-Man, because he was too much into the I'm a quiet, fearful nerd, which Spider-Man never, ever was. Like, if you read the old books, like, Flash will come and make fun of Spider-Man and, you know, try to bully him, but Peter Parker will send it right back at Flash and hurl insults right back, and then they're both in detention. Like, that was Spider-Man. You know, I'm not going to take it from you, and, oh, whoops, I'm in trouble again. Kind of deal, as opposed to, like, he's more vulnerable, but he wasn't, like, he fought that vulnerability all the time with the jokes and with hurling back insults if he had to.
Right. So the Maguire added more of, like, a Clark Kent aspect to it.
Was he funny, Tobey Maguire? Like, was that a funny Spider-Man? I can't really remember
it that. It seemed like there's a lot of effort into the jokes.
And isn't it kind of like a camp style? Like, Sam Raimi is like, didn't he also do like Army of Darkness?
And he did. Dead?
And so he did.
Because like the third one was just like, it took it in a strange direction, but I wouldn't think of it as like funny in the same way that like the the Tom Holland one.
And I think, like, yeah, from what I recall, it's like the action was humorous and but also like really, really cool because CG at the time could start doing these amazing, you know, you could put Spider-Man as a CG character.
Yeah, that was in front of a being able to swing between buildings and making it look real was enough to sell those movies.
Yeah, I was super excited. That's all about we needed.
You know. And then I thought it was a bad Mary Jane, too. I didn't think her character was, like, she was too shy. Mary Jane is the socialite. You know, she loves attention and is just like, I want to be an actress, but I'm kind of quiet and unhappy about it. And like, no, like, if Mary Jane wants to be an actress or a singer or whatever she wanted to be in those movies, like, she would be front of the line. Like, yes, I want to try this and I'm going to try it now. And all, you know, can I get help from all of my friends and include them in every step I make along the way, whether I succeed or fail? Like, that's Mary Jane, as opposed to, like, well, could you maybe come see my play, maybe? And it's like, you know, she would be like, everybody come see my play.
Right.
Come every night. You know, come all the time and stand up and cheer for me. Like, that's Mary. That's the Mary Jane I know. And I don't think Sam Raimi's takes were – I think they were consistent within the movies, but they weren't consistent with the source material. So I like that second one, but I also really liked Green Goblin's performance, or the Norman Osborn, more likely. Because when he was wearing the mask, you couldn't see his face, and that was pretty bad. We all know that. But like when he was talking to himself in the mirror in that first Spider-Man, like, oh, my God, that was great. Little preview to the – was that before or after Gollum was talking to himself?
It might have been predated. I don't know.
I can't remember.
It was very close.
Yeah, very close. They're both early 2000.
And the Andrew Garfield, did we?
Oh, boy, I don't remember. I watched them both.
Yeah, I also watched them both.
I don't remember. This Electro and the Lizard.
Yeah.
Were the villains in both of those?
Yeah.
Wanted to make everyone into lizards in the first one, and I don't remember a thing. Jamie Foxx as Electro.
Yeah.
So was that an unnecessary reboot?
Yeah. Well, unnecessary from our point of view. And Sony has the movie license, and to keep the movie license, you need to be making movies. So if they go for a stretch of like 7 years or something without making a movie, then you lose the license. So in their view, it was absolutely necessary to reboot Spider-Man because like they always want to be making a movie.
But did you feel like it brought anything new? If you're saying the Tobey Maguire one brought like, oh, it had new CGI, like those types of things, you know? So it brought it, kind of, it didn't evolve it in any,
way. It didn't add anything. I recommend it to nobody. Those movies, I don't remember those movies.
Although there was, Gwen Stacy was the interest in those movies as opposed to Mary Jane, which I thought was an interesting twist.
Yeah, and I feel that. Yeah, that is interesting how it could take place in the same. It's also a high school story, right?
Yeah.
And I just recall the first one being infinitely better than the second one of those amazing Spider-Mans, but I can't exactly tell you why.
Right.
You know? So it's like. Yeah.
Well, the end of the first one was memorable to me, but.
I remember Lizard standing on a tower.
Yeah.
I don't remember why.
I think I like Spider-Man also because of the villains.
Yeah.
I think are much cooler than a lot of other heroes'
That's
villains.
Another, the Batman, the rogues gallery argument.
And I would like to take this opportunity to, if anyone who makes movies about Spider-Man is listening, Craven, please.
Oh, yeah.
Please, Craven. Let's just write him into something here.
I know a couple of people in your camp.
Yeah. Craven is just this crazy, cool and creepy villain who he's dressed in lion skins and he just always has a mustache. It's almost like a I always think of remember the Punch Out game from Nintendo, like a character from there. He's just got this mustache and he's very stereotypical. He's just always like not irritated but just kind of affected me like a minor chord. You're reading, you just kind of feel like a little more impacted from this villain than others. So yeah, the Lizard, the Sand Guy, Sandman, you know, the Vulture, like I could
Rhino
just give me
was in one of those, wasn't he?
Give me more.
Paul Giamatti was Rhino, wasn't he?
Yeah,
there's also the Shocker, the guy with the face and the crazy hands that shock things.
Shocker's,
that'd be cool to see.
Shocker was great as a cameo in Homecoming, I thought. We're just like, yeah, this guy, whatever. He's no big deal. He's just the Shocker, which is also the video game. It was just like, oh, that old Shocker's back. Go beat him up and send him back to prison.
Comic relief.
Yeah.
But to me, like, a superhero has many good aspects, but one of the major categories is how good are their villains. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the better the villains, the more enjoyable of a read I think the book is.
So. Sure, which again, Superior Spider-Man is, it is Dr. Octopus. It is his villain fighting his old friends, which is another reason I think that's so good, because like, there's a new group in town calling themselves the Sinister Six, and they're like, you're not the Sinister Six. I'm the Sinister Six, me and those old guys. But yeah, I mean, the villains, especially with Batman, a little bit with Spider-Man, the villains are great when they tease out, this hero has a flaw, and I'm going to magnify it and become it, and that's who I am. I'm your one vulnerability made huge, which is, you know, Jonah Jameson searching for the secret identity of Spider-Man is such a great villain, because that's a vulnerability, is who Peter Parker really is and who Peter Parker loves and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think I like Jameson's voice, and it really makes you identify. It's like one side of the argument between Spider-Man and the public. You have, you know, oh my gosh, thank you, Spider-Man, for, you know, helping me save my bike or whatever. I guess I have that view from Homecoming of him rescuing the bike and like, is this yours? Is this yours?
Yeah.
And nobody, and he just like leaves a note on it.
Yeah.
But then there's also the J. Jonah Jameson of, he is a public menace. He needs to be stopped. And, you know,
he's leaving webs everywhere. He's making a mess.
You can't just leave criminals hanging. You know, that's a job for the police.
Yeah.
It really speaks to me to be, there's always, no matter how you believe something in life, there will almost always be someone who believes just as fervently the opposite.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm reminded of that with Jameson and Spider-Man, because who doesn't love Spider-Man? Well, evidently, he's the voice for that cabal, for that group that doesn't like Spider-Man.
Like, one of the great things about Jonah Jameson is how distinctive his voice is and how it seems to carry. Like, it hasn't changed since, like, the 90s TV show or, you know, you hear it, of course, and you hear it far from home, but you hear it in the video game as well.
Yeah.
He's kind of like heckling you as you're playing the game, trying to save lives.
He's
and trying
so
to
good.
Fight crime.
He runs his own podcast in the video game that you tap into. And it's weird. We're like saying his voice is distinctive, but it must have been three or four different actors that we're describing in the video game and then the Tobey Maguire movies and then in the old cartoon. Like, there's no way those were all J.K. Simmons, but.
Right.
It's still
but somehow
like,
J.K. Simmons is who you think of.
In your mind, like, you know, there is that J. Jonah Jameson, and J.K. Simmons channeled all of our collective subconscious views of that voice, that angry white male authoritarian voice that just like, when it back in my day, and it's like, we all know it. We can't all do it, but we all know it. So, yeah, Jameson. Almost left him out in this podcast. We can't do that. One of the best parts of Spider-Man is the J. Jonah Jameson, the adult. To, you know, he's the father that Spider-Man
get a haircut.
Never had and doesn't need. Right.
The voice of doubt.
Right.
Yeah.
The voice of doubt.
It's internal, but it's also public. It's
very, Spider-Man's own doubt. Like, maybe I should give up. You know?
The voice
just
of
in him all the time.
Implied approval. Not that he's trying to get his approval, but just like that, that's out there. You know, like, who do I answer to?
Yeah, that's great. And that's a thing that no one else has. Like, Batman never gives up, but Spider-Man's always thinking about it. Like, not only because am I doing more harm than good, you know, he knows he's not, but like, he wants to be himself sometimes. He wants to go on a date and not have to leave the second an ambulance flies by, right? Like, he wants to help those people, but he wants to be himself.
Or to even feel compelled to leave.
Yeah, and then having Jameson shout you down all the time is a constant reminder that his relationship with himself is maybe unhealthy. Being Spider-Man is maybe not good for him. And he's always doubting that. It's a good shout, as they say, from a man who shouts always and all the time at Spider-Man to turn himself into the police.
The video game.
The video game is great.
It is fantastic.
If you love PlayStation 4 adventure action video games. You know, you swing around and fight bad guys and do what you want, and there's a story, but maybe I don't feel like doing the story right now. Maybe I want to go do this other thing.
It's
maybe
great.
I just want to swing around New York for a little while.
Right, it's a great combination of a sandbox and story-driven.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel like doing the story or doing, like, exploring, you can go look for the towers or, you know, like,
go
find all
pictures
these.
Of,
go take pictures or find all these packs that you've left around. The controls are, I was very impressed with the fact that I was playing for 5 minutes, and I was able to do exactly
what you want to do. Yeah,
you can't. There's not a steep learning curve.
Yeah, to learn to be Spider-Man.
Right. You just You just get up there and start swinging, and that's exactly what you do.
Hit the button, and he swings once.
Yeah, right.
Hit the button, he swings again. You know,
right.
Like, I got the hang of this.
It's like
you make him swing left or right, and
Like the Madden 94 of PlayStation 4 games.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. Everyone figures it out in 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And that's good design, right?
Very good
design. When it just works. When it just feels right. When the game is played how you want it to play, as opposed to you need to learn how to play this game,
mm-hmm.
like Sekiro or a Dark Souls game or something like that, where it's like, you need to come to us. This game comes to you with, we're going to make it feel right. We're going to make it play right.
And it also has elements of like God of War, where you have to solve logistical puzzles or something like that in order to advance.
Couple of stealth sequences, couple of action sequences. Mm-hmm. You go between sneaking around because you're outnumbered to the shocker's going to pull down the ceiling if you don't save the day. It's Spider-Man. Everything's good about Spider-Man, except maybe Amazing Spider-Man. Those movies, not so good. But if you love Spider-Man, come to the library. We've got the video game. We've got Into the Spider-Verse is out now. Endgame is on shelves today. Maybe you can find it on a quick pick because it's probably a huge holds list. Add your name if you can because you got to see.
We have a lot of quick picks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The graphic novels, the good old comic books, we got those too.
Yeah. Check out Superior. It sounds like it's pretty good. And
Superior's great.
Yeah.
Or we got a lot of Venom comics when the Venom movie came out. You know, that stuff's all good too.
Isn't the source material for Into the Spider-Verse also? Well, I know it's on Hoopla.
I don't think we have it, but it is on Hoopla. Yeah. They just called it the Spider-Verse story arc. So search for Spider-Verse on Hoopla, and you'll find some comics.
If we have any listeners who have maybe seen all the movies or played the video games but haven't read any comics, what would be some good entry-level comics?
So entry-level Spider-Man is a little tough, but basically anything that just says Spider-Man on it will make sense to you. Right.
As opposed to,
there's not a good, here's the one perfect Spider-Man book. That exists for Batman. That exists for Superman. If you want to say, I'm only going to read one Superman book, what is it? I'll go get All-Star Superman and I'll hand it to you and say, this is the one perfect example. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man is unfortunately not like that. You just got to jump in and read some Spider-Man books or read some Venom books or read whatever is available to you. And kind of start pulling it together is the way I recommend it.
Another benefit of that, though, is that you have your choice of art format and of drawing, too, because there's been a broad spectrum of the way that he's been, the stories have been drawn, and whatever art speaks to the reader.
And Spider-Man has been written by Dan Slott for a very long time, up until very recently. He wrote for years. And then, of course, Miles Morales was written by one writer for 13 or 11 years. There's a lot of consistency there. Like if you get something from 2004 or something from 2012 or something from 2018, it's almost always that same guy writing either Miles Morales as the Ultimate Spider-Man or Peter Parker as the Amazing Spider-Man. And it's all good. Like there's a reason. Like Spider-Man is the best-selling almost every month. Up until recently, Batman has come back in a big way. But Spider-Man, that's the most popular Marvel book. Like, Deadpool and Wolverine come close sometimes, but not close enough.
And so. Hoopla has tons of comics, and you can read them in that viewer. You can check out 10 per month, so that's a great way to check them out, too.
Hoopla is great. It's very current. It's stuff from up to, a year ago or 6 months ago, which shocks me. This is it's so convenient. Hoopla is so good with comics. Don't even need to come to the library. If you have a library card number, you can just log in from home, check out your 4 or 5 or 6, however many, up to 10 a month. Spider-Man graphic novels or any graphic novels. They've got DC, too, so.
And they have a lot of different indie comics and graphic novels as well, too.
They've got a lot of Image and a couple of Boom and all that good stuff. So, yeah, come check out comics, check out movies, check out virtual comics, whatever you need to do, check out video games, however you need to get at Spider-Man. Spider-Man's been great recently and been great for a long time, and we've got it in as many formats as we can possibly get it. We've got Spider-Man books for kids on the second floor and all that good stuff. So that's it for Spider-Man. All things Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, Superior Spider-Man, the Spider-Man video game, Far From Home, Endgame. Basically anything but Far From Home is at the library. Endgame is out now and Into the Spider-Verse is out now. So if you haven't seen those yet, come pick those up or pick up Homecoming as well and pick up some comics while you're here. We've got them on a couple of different floors and in a couple of different formats, whether digital or physical and all that. There's a million ways to get Spider-Man. Whatever you like, we've got something for you. So that's Minor Rex. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.